Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, August 1st. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Aerobatic Air Show gets Humboldt go-ahead. Eureka City Manager responds to Governor Newsom's new executive order on homeless encampments. And missing Redway woman located safe in Sonoma County. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Just before 3 p.m. on August 1st, the family of missing woman Jamie Maroney announced that the 42-year-old was located safe in Sonoma County. Maroney was last seen by her ex-boyfriend in the early hours of July 16th when she left their shared residence. After several days, the family filed a missing persons report when it became apparent that the Redway resident had not made contact with any of her acquaintances since July 16th. The two-week-long search for Maroney has turned up multiple unconfirmed sightings in and around southern Humboldt. However, those sightings weren't confirmed, leaving the family worrying for Maroney's safety. In coordination with the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, the Sonoma County Sheriff's Office was able to locate Maroney and deliver the joyous news to her family. The family expressed deep gratitude for the community's help and support in looking for Maroney. Despite concerns about use of fireworks, an air show is set to happen at Humboldt County's main airport. Daniel Mintz reports.
A noisy event at the California Coast Humboldt County Airport in McKinleyville is nevertheless expected to be a tourist revenue draw and getting gung-ho support from Humboldt County. Rumble in the Redwoods is an aerobatic airplane show with fireworks, and at its July 23rd meeting, the county's Board of Supervisors gave the airport a go-ahead to host the show. Set for the afternoons of August 10th and 11th, the show will feature historic aircraft and pyrotechnics. Supervisor Steve Madrone, whose district includes McKinleyville, said the community is very excited about the show, but some concerns have also been heard. He responded to them.
I did have some concerns about some air shows do simulated bombing runs, but that is not going to be occurring in this show. There will be pyrotechnics or fireworks to enhance some of the elements of the show. And I know there is some concern from veterans and others with animals about the impact on that to PTSD and other things. The good news here is that we know when it's happening. Unlike 4th of July and New Year's, you never know when the next one's going to go off, right? And they go on for hours and they go on late at night. This is in the middle of the day on Saturday and Sunday between noon and 4 o'clock. So there's been really good notification to the community. Again, I thank you, Director Rogatz, for all of that. And I think the community is very much looking forward to this. And for those that are sensitive to this, hopefully with the advance notice, it helps reduce any impact there might be.
County Aviation Director Cody Rogatz said staffers from a variety of county departments have enthusiastically worked in collaboration with the show's operator, which is named in county documents as Rumble Over the Redwoods Incorporated. Rogatz said an anonymous local business owner has contributed to compensate for the show's expected inability to recover its $1 million plus cost. He described the show as being well worth the work and the donation.
Why has this local business owner agreed to finance this endeavor? It's about bringing our community together around a special event. This proposed event will be first class in every way. We have the best air show director in the business helping us organize this event with the best performers in the industry. So everything is done in a safe manner that brings the community together, inspires the next generation to explore aviation, and educates them about aviation history and honoring our veterans. As Supervisor Madrone highlighted, we've had recent discussions about the pyrotechnics, which is standard as a part of an air show. The air show does plan to utilize pyrotechnics on the airport property to add to the entertainment value of the planes flying overhead. These pyrotechnics will include flames and associated audible features on the ground in concert with music that is being played for the crowd while aerobatic acts are being performed for the crowd.
A public comment period was brief and didn't include any objections to the show. One local veteran downplayed the likelihood of the show causing PTSD effects, saying memories of, quote, bomb blasts shaking the earth are associated with, quote, eliminating the enemies. Supervisor Rex Bone said the event is popular with more than 5,000 advance tickets sold so far. He said the show will bring in sales tax revenue and will be well run.
I know the promoter, I talked to a hotelier, that they've already taken in over $60,000 of prearranged rooms for the pilots and crews of the people coming in. That's $60,000 just for people who are coming on in to put the show on.
Right.
So the TOT tax, you can do the math on that. And the nice thing about it, the guy putting it on has been, all the hours have been cut in half because the guy's putting this on has put on numerous, puts the Capital Air Show on and things like that. So I think it's going to be something kind of fun for the community and historic. There's going to be over $50 to $60 million worth of planes here.
Supervisor Mike Wilson was objective, noting the work of county staff as being a cost to the county, and he asked for post-event analysis as it's not undergoing an environmental review process. But the show's seen as an addition to the county's summer get-togethers, and permission to use the airport got unanimous approval. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Metz.
Governor Gavin Newsom passed a new executive order on homeless encampments following a ruling by the Supreme Court. And to see how the order will be applied locally, KMUD News spoke with Eureka City Manager Miles Slattery.
To me, it's really nebulous. I don't know. You know, he made mention of unsafe encampments. We deal anything that's deemed to be unsafe, we deal with, regardless of whether it's relating to a homeless encampment or a trip and fall or whatever it may be. So I found it interesting that he said something about unsafe without any qualifier or any definition of that. I'd also say it's difficult to deem what an encampment is. Is he saying that a community member that has a sleeping bag and pulls up on a park bench and lays a sleeping bag, is that an encampment, or is an encampment something a little more extensive than that? So I don't know how to interpret what he's saying. If I know some are interpreting it, like if you see a community member experiencing homelessness and they're in a public space, that we're going to arrest them. If that's what they're trying to say is what the order was, I don't interpret it that way at all. I think it's very vague as to say what it is. I can say that, you know, we do our best with the resources that we do have to not only provide services, that's what we're here for those individuals who don't want to receive those services. We have other ways of addressing those things, and some of those are punitive and some of them aren't. But I don't think that what he said was clearly defined, and I think there's many different people who interpret what he said in many different ways.
Slattery says Eureka will not be using this announcement as a green light to evict the homeless encampments.
When we have encampments that are entrenched, we have been very consistent about going and providing those individual services, giving them proper notification. After 72 hours, we go out and we take care of it. If there's any personal belongings, we store those belongings. None of those practices are going to change. We don't, nor have we ever, you know, depending on the resources we have, we try and get it on it as soon as possible. But if we ever have a situation where there's an entrenched encampment, we have, you know, we go through this process on a daily basis with our social services program, with Uplift, with our mental health clinicians, with our CSET team, with our parks employees, with our harbor employees. This is a daily routine that we've done ever since, you know, the Boise case happened.
The Boise case, officially known as Martin v. City of Boise, was a landmark 2018 court ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which determined that cities cannot enforce anti-camping ordinances if they do not have enough shelter beds available for homeless individuals, as doing so would violate the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment. This decision significantly impacted how cities address homelessness and their enforcement of public space ordinances.
we will have to go back to council with our ordinance because we developed a camping ordinance that was totally incomplete. Our legal is looking at it now to make sure that it still is in compliance. It's likely going to have to go back to make sure that we're consistent with what federal law is now. So it will probably come back to council in the near future.
When asked if this new order could bring more homeless to Humboldt, Slattery says,
I've heard that for a very long time, and I don't think it holds any water. You know, we had tremigrants that were here, and then they would get screwed over by a farm and end up in a bad situation. I'm sure that that's happened. We've had people that come here, whether it's because of the weather or anything like that. I don't think that there's like, hey, everybody, let's go to Humboldt County to go hang out. I think these people are down on their luck, and for them to have to move and travel like that is not something that they have the resources to do.
The ACLU in California responded to Governor Newsom's executive order on homeless encampments. Quote, California's fundamental obligation is to safeguard the health, safety, and well-being of every resident, regardless of their housing status. Yet once again, elected officials are demonstrating a disregard for human dignity and have opted to address a systemic problem with a superficial fix. For decades, California has failed to build sufficient housing for people across all income levels, leaving thousands of residents, including families and children, no alternative but to sleep in cars, tents, and on the street. Governor Gavin Newsom's plan to displace and dispossess unhoused people, even though the state does not have enough housing, is a cruel tactic that only masks the problem. Politicians appear more concerned about optics and the visibility of homelessness than they are with providing services and tackling California's affordable housing crisis. Punishing people for being unhoused won't address underlying issues driving homelessness and skyrocketing housing costs in California. In fact, it will make homelessness worse. Without stable and affordable housing, people are more likely to experience job instability, have health issues, and cycle through emergency public services, such as hospitals and shelters. Governor Newsom's endorsement of Caltrans as a model for clearing encampments is alarming given the agency's history of unlawfully seizing and destroying people's belongings. Legal advocates sue the state over this practice, which led to a $1.3 million settlement to compensate people whose property had been confiscated. Many Californians live in fear of losing their homes. Elected officials must act decisively to expand affordable housing for all income levels, provide rental assistance to keep people in their homes, and implement stronger eviction protection measures. We urge Governor Newsom to implement solutions that meet the needs of people experiencing homelessness and treat all Californians with the dignity and respect that they deserve. End quote.
It would have been great if he does this executive order and says the state takes on all liability associated with that, because I can assure you that those people that are being aggressive towards this, ACLU, those type of things, they're going to sue, and there's going to be issues that arise from this. And you know, if he's going to sit there and say that we need to enforce, are you taking on the liability for this state? Are you going to, you know, address these lawsuits that come from if somebody, you know, oversees it? And I don't, not to be adversarial, but I don't know if anybody sees this as a green light.
The city of Eureka is working to bolster affordable housing to tackle the root cause of homelessness.
We've had all those in place, so we've had the ability to do a tiny home village. We have a declared emergency for shelter crisis. We've had that in place for years now, and so all of those things we've been able to do. The building code allows for it, and we go off the state's building code, and so all of those things Eureka's had in place and have been allowed and permitted to do so within certain zoning, basically anywhere inland. You're allowed to do that. In the coastal zone, you get into more regulatory stuff, but anything inland, almost every one of our zone properties allow for tiny home villages or our campgrounds, those type of things. That's always been available, and it's been available ever since we declared our emergency shelter on. And so that's always been in place in Eureka. And then as far as shelter spaces, we're obviously still working with the county on their navigation center at Third and Commercial. We're looking at expanding that. We're in discussions with the county to make that a larger building and have more capacity. And so there should be something coming out soon about that from Department of Health and Human Services. And then we are coming close to finalizing the 30-plus individual units down on Hilfiker that are being constructed right now and almost completed. And so that'll be, I think, the one area that would be beneficial would be to have more shelter space. That navigation center will have, you know, 12 or 13 more beds. But, you know, we've come a long way with the warming centers that we've developed with the help of the faith-based community, not have any barriers. So whether they have a dog or want to be with a couple, they're allowed to go there.
Executive order cannot force local officials to remove homeless encampments, but provides guidance for those that choose to. However, in closing, Slattery said those guidelines remain unclear. In state news, gas utilities are asking the California Public Utilities Commission to approve 5 projects that would blend hydrogen with natural gas used in residential and commercial buildings. Some environmental groups oppose the plan. Suzanne Potter brings you the details.
A coalition of environmental groups is asking the California Public Utilities Commission to dismiss a plan by gas utilities to blend hydrogen into the natural gas lines that help heat our homes and businesses. Opponents say that hydrogen is too expensive, risks indoor air pollution and gas leaks, and is not guaranteed to be produced using renewable sources. Jim Dennison with the Sierra Club says in the long term, the state needs to phase out appliances that use natural gas in favor of electric models.
Ultimately, any kind of partial system that relies on this blending is going to prolong the reliance on the gas system rather than giving a 100% solution to the problem through electrification.
SoCalGas argues that hydrogen will reduce the amount of natural gas used and result in lower carbon emissions and less air pollution. They also cite a study from UC Riverside that found blends of up to 5% hydrogen could be used without significantly increasing risk factors in storage, transmission, and utilization. People can put in their 2 cents on the CPUC website. Dennison notes that SoCalGas, San Diego Gas and Electric, PG&E, and Southwest Gas Corporation are seeking approval to pass $200 million in costs onto ratepayers for the pilot projects.
This is the utility's 3rd try to get an application for hydrogen blending pilots approved. They keep failing to present applications that address basic questions about how to do this safely and in a way that effectively engages the communities that are affected.
If approved, the projects would be built at UC Irvine, UC San Diego, and in Truckee, Lodi, and Orange Cove. The federal government is spending billions to build hydrogen hubs across the U.S., including sites in Long Beach and Oakland, in part in order to help decarbonize industries such as shipping. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, Senate panel holds hearing over future of U.S. electric car market. KPFA's Audi McAfee reports.
With soaring oil prices and the environmental consequences of continued use of fossil fuels in the national conversation, automotive manufacturers and lawmakers are pushing electric vehicles, or EVs. According to the Senate Budget Committee, 20% of the vehicles sold around the world in 2023 were electric. The Biden-Harris administration has a goal of 50% new EV sales by 2030.
Going electric benefits Western democracies, as oil and gas revenues fund many of our worst foreign adversaries.
That is Rhode Island Republican Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. He chairs the budget committee. He said switching away from oil also helps protect national security.
Look no further than the corrupt petro-tyrant Vladimir Putin. As we reduce our dependence on oil and gas, we diminish our foreign adversaries' ability to bully and corrupt.
Whitehouse also said now is the time to update the nation's electrical grid through smart reforms and to invest in supply chains, which would ultimately help fight climate change. He says the transportation sector is the largest source of fossil fuel emissions in the U.S. Many committee members said they approve of electric vehicles, but are concerned that there isn't currently enough power in the electrical grid to meet the new demand. Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley says there are many holes to be filled in the nation's rapid electrical vehicle transition.
They include a lack of critical minerals needed to produce EVs, lack of transmission infrastructure needed to support their increased electricity demands and our current reliance upon nefarious countries in the EV supply chain.
A University of Michigan study says the world would need to mine 115% more copper by 2050 than has been mined in all of human history until now.
China controls 28% of lithium mines, 41% of cobalt mines, and nearly 20% of copper mines.
That was Maureen Hinman. She's the co-founder and chairwoman of the Silverado Policy Accelerator, an energy policy think tank. She says China is unfairly and illegally subsidizing its resource mining industry. The Center for Strategic and International Studies says China began investing heavily in electrical and hybrid vehicles in 2009 when the government adopted a plan to become the leader in EV manufacturing. Experts said another concern is whether the Highway Trust Fund will have the funding it needs in the years to come. The Highway Trust Fund makes up 80% of the federal highway spending, with the majority of it coming from gas taxes. The bipartisan infrastructure law that recently replenished the fund sunsets in 2 years. The Highway Trust Fund pays for repairs and construction for highways and mass transit. Jeff Davis is a senior fellow with the Eno Center for Transportation. He says without gas tax revenue, new funding sources will be needed.
In short, if rapid decarbonization of highway transportation is to be a federal policy goal, Congress should carefully consider whether and how to replace the fossil fuel-based highway user taxes that currently support highway and mass transit spending with some other revenue source.
The Senate Budget Committee will continue to gather information from experts and compile a report on EVs in the coming weeks. For KPFA, I'm Audie McAfee.
Immigrant and prisoner rights advocates demand ICE end contracts with private detention companies. Eun Chan from KPFA brings you this report.
Dozens of immigrant rights advocates and families of immigrants in detention gathered in front of the ICE building in San Francisco Wednesday. They were demanding accountability from ICE and the private prison company GEO Group, which they accuse of inhumane and abusive conditions in detention facilities. Jonathan Montes Diaz is a community member detained in Golden State Annex Detention Center in Bakersfield. He wasn't physically at the protest, but spoke through the phone. He said basic facilities such as restrooms, showers, hallways are in poor condition. He said healthcare is also subpar.
I have experienced long wait time for medical and dental. And when I finally get seen, I am told that ICE deems my procedure to be too expensive, or I am placed at the end of the list, a list I have been on for 13-plus months.
Montes Diaz said he brought these issues to the administration at Golden State Annex, but the conditions only got worse. He said he also talked to two ICE officials, but both of them told him there was nothing they could do. Jose Ruben Hernandez is a formerly detained leader at both Mesa Valdez in McFarland and Golden State Annex. He's also a spiritual activist with the Interfaith Movement for Human Integrity. It is a California social justice interfaith organization. He said authorities in these facilities retaliated against him when he complained about the conditions.
These two for-profit ICE detention centers have damaged me physically and mentally, whether it was through the sexual abuse and harassment, to the long period of being placed in solitary confinement, to the violent transfers to Texas for purpose of being tortured and force-fed, to being denied medical treatment that has left me cane-bound, in which all of these are the many forms of retaliation that I experienced by ICE and GEO, all for asking for better living conditions, as well as to be paid the California minimum wage for the janitorial work that we were subjected to do.
Eunice Hernandez Jr. is the co-director of Pangea Legal Services. It is a nonprofit organization that provides legal services for immigrants. She said human rights violations have long existed since private detention centers were created. She said ICE is supposed to hold companies like GEO accountable for the conditions at their facilities. She said Congress should be doing more to make sure ICE and these detention centers follow the rules.
Who's holding ICE accountable, right? And so part of that responsibility falls on members of Congress. And so we're also asking them to step up and to do more. Instead of continuing to fund billions of taxpayers' dollars to ICE to detain people, they need to really think about how ICE is not following their own standards and putting people's lives in danger.
Hernandez Janier said activists will continue to organize protests in front of the ICE building and bring more awareness to the issue until there is change. For KPFA News, I'm Yirin Chen.
In international news, UN Security Council meets amid rising Middle East tensions following airstrike that killed top Hamas leader. Pacifica Radio's Atash Shaheen reports.
In a letter to the Security Council president today, Iran accused Israel of carrying out an attack that killed Mr. Haniyeh and claimed it was a serious infringement of Iran's sovereignty and territorial integrity and constituted a blatant violation of international law.
That's UN Undersecretary General Rosemary DiCarlo. In an open letter to the Security Council, Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini and other officials said Haniyeh's death will be avenged. They warned Israel of, quote, harsh punishment intended to instill deep regret in the perpetrator. The Iranian delegate to the Security Council characterized Israel as a terrorist actor and suggested the United States is complicit in the missile strike that killed Haniyeh and the earlier strike on Beirut that killed Hezbollah commander Fuad Shukr.
The crimes reveal a lack of commitment to peace and stability in the region and suggest an intention to escalate conflict and expand the war through the entire region. The responsibility of the United States as a strategic ally and main supporters of the Israeli regime in the region cannot be overlooked in this horrific crime. This act could not be occurred without the authorization and intelligence support of the U.S.
The U.S. representative at the Security Council said the U.S. had no involvement or prior knowledge of the plan to kill Haniyeh. He said the U.S. has not even confirmed the reports of his death and blamed Iran for escalations.
It's best not to speculate on the impact that recent events may have on peace and security in the Middle East. A broader war is neither imminent nor inevitable. Although the opportunistic attacks by Iran and its network of terrorist proxies and partners across the region have repeatedly brought us closer to a regional conflict. For our part, the United States will continue to lead the way in diplomatic efforts to end the war in Gaza and reduce regional tensions.
U.S. representatives at the State Department and in the United Nations have said they will continue to work toward a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas. National Security spokesman John Kirby said it's too early to tell what impact Haniyeh's death will have on reaching a ceasefire deal. Haniyeh was one of the top diplomats involved in ceasefire negotiations. The Security Council Undersecretary said diplomatic efforts are urgently needed to cool down rising tensions in the region. But the UN's most powerful body failed to coalesce around one united message. For KPFA News, Pacifica Radio, I'm Ata Shaheen.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. And thanks to our reporters, Audi McAfee, Suzanne Potter, Eun Chan, and Ati Shaheen. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605. Or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.